first thing that popped into my head was the name of your training program, the Athletic Weapon Training. And mm-hmm. regardless of anything you do, I just thought that was a cool freaking name. So I saw that mm-hmm. and I was like, immediately my mind went to like, oh shit, I want to do that now, because it says Athletic Weapon, you know?
Right, so, right.
Yeah, good on you for that. That's pretty cool.
Well, you know, you attract a certain thing. Like I remember, you know, in New York City, I was working with potentially opening like a group fitness business.
Yeah.
And, you know, you have mostly like really soft people
yeah.
in Manhattan. So, you know, but the people that we were working with on the business side were like, yeah, you know, we really need a name for this place.
Yeah.
And I was like, man, you don't want me to name it. Like, I'm going to scare away all these people in Manhattan.
Yeah.
They were like, no, like, what are your thoughts? And I was like, well, I'd really like to call it guerrilla warfare.
It's really cool,
and
too.
And they were like, yeah. So, yeah, we won't go with any of your suggestions. I was like, I already told you,
why?
Man.
Why? So they didn't like that? That's a cool name, too. Like, both of those. I mean, I guess it attracts the people who want, like,
exactly.
you know,
yeah.
real shit. Like good stuff from the workouts, you know? So,
right.
like, actual
which
focus,
is, like,
though.
Literally 0% of the population of Manhattan, for the most part.
Is there a certain type of, like, workout style that Manhattan people are inclined towards? Like, is that
bullshit?
Yeah. Because you're right. Cause it's, I've watched your videos. I've looked at all the stuff you do. Everything you do is super science based. It's focused. It makes sense. So is it, so I guess it's more towards the trendy shit. Like it's all, everything kind of,
yeah.
Okay. Cause that's, I mean,
yeah, they want group fitness stuff with, you know, either whatever's trendy or mm-hmm. maybe like, just like, jam like 100 people in the same room with like, you know, nightclub lights and music, and then like punch boxing bags in the dark, like in a really bad way, like that just makes no sense. Or, you know, like it's just like, I don't even get it. It's basically like, how can you recreate a nightclub and like slap a little bit of fitness on it that uh-huh. makes no sense?
So that's a thing that exists. That's real.
Yeah.
Really? I didn't know that existed. There
business.
You go. I didn't know that.
I mean, COVID kind of fucked that up pretty good.
Yeah.
In terms of like slamming that many bodies in the same, but it'll be back. I mean, that's what, like, you know, there's like definitely a crowd that just is all into that. Like you get like young city people that, like, you know, they just want something that's like a social experience more than a fitness experience. And so the game there is to literally just build social experiences with a little bit of movement and an instructor and music.
Yeah.
And you kind of have a business concept at that point.
Now, is the influencer community big over there? Like the, kids coming out of college, starting their own like online personal training company.
Oh,
that's gotta be a big part too.
Yeah.
Okay. How do you feel about that?
I mean, it just is, it's its own thing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I don't worry about it too much because a lot of time it's just like this flash in the pan sort of a thing. And
yeah.
I mean, it's just, it's like aggravating to watch most of the time because it's like, you know, just watching illogical, misguided application of nonsense.
Yeah.
It's just sort of like, and it's sort of like, but I'm always kind of curious, like, how did you even think of these things?
Like,
where's this going? Like, what is there any thought to this, or like, what is the, where does the thought go to?
I've always been fascinated with how, and I don't know what you think about this, but you know, the story doesn't change too much from influencer to influencer with their like training programs. You know, they all do pretty much the same thing with maybe a different little bit of story here and there, but that, for whatever reason, people are still very much attracted to each and every one of those people. So I don't know, like, what do you think, why are people attracted to that? Why does that still work and people still consider that genuine? Because from a business perspective, it doesn't make sense to me. Like, it's
right.
the same. Like, why is it, I don't know. I just, it confuses me. I don't know what you think.
I think that what works is good looking, charismatic, energetic people.
Okay.
And it's that, like, that's the recipe. It's just like, who's going to be the coolest kid at high school sort of still. And that still sells really well. And like a lot of people, I feel like that end up being successful in a big city or they're still kind of like the kid that wasn't exactly the coolest person in high school, you know, like they hard enough. They're smart and they worked hard to be able to work their way through the ranks. Yeah. But I feel like everybody still has this kind of like missing hole inside of themselves of like, if they were like, you know, kind of a misfit in high school or middle school or whatever it is. And then they latch onto that person that's just sort of like, that looks the part, acts the part, knows they're the part, always has been the part. And it's like, that's kind of what it is, as far as I can tell.
So it's kind of like the cool kids table, like these people.
It really,
That's
all it is. That's really legitimately. And like, you know, it's usually someone that you can't even help yourself, but have a good time being around.
Sure.
It just is.
Yeah.
And because, you know, I've been around this enough and I've like, I was just confused by it. I was like, how is this person working with so many clients? And then like, you're like, you hear like, oh my God, they're charging like $300 an hour. Like, this is insane. Like, this just doesn't even make any sense on any level. And then it's like, wait, let me kind of like backtrack on this a little bit. And,
yeah.
All right. Like, I guess like their clothes that they wear are stylish or like have a vibe to it. They've got an attitude about them that attracts people. They're fun. They're always kind of engaging. There's not a lot of like awkward social pauses or they just have a flow to them in the way that they interact with other people.
So they've developed themselves to a point where they've just turned themselves into this like sexy, you know, social butterfly kind of person, and people are just naturally attracted to them.
Yeah, and I don't even know if it was all that purposeful or if it's just like that's just who they've always been.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Because a lot of times it'll be like someone that had a different career before this, mm-hmm. or, you know, it like fitness isn't even their primary track. Like I don't know. It's almost like how in LA or something, like every waitress is an actress.
But I hear that. Yeah, that's true.
In New York, like every trainer is a something else. And it's like not even their primary gig or something, but you know, maybe they're like a Broadway performer, and that kind of makes sense where you're like, oh, this person like gets up and entertains people for a living. And they're just like the most energetic person you've ever met. And they're good looking and on and on and on. And that's usually what it is, but there ain't a lick of science in what they're doing. And like, do they actually get anybody results? Not really.
Yeah.
It's kind of like the same thing as like Peloton or something where it's like people get excited about it. They do it. But there's no real progressive overload or plan to it. So it's kind of like you end up just spinning your wheels at a certain point.
So as of right now, we're kind of in that mode of trends taking over and science-based fitness, very real analytical fitness that gives you the results. That's kind of, do you think it's taken a back seat and it's hard for people like yourself to kind of like get the real message out there?
No, I don't think so. I think there's enough. There's like, I don't have a scarcity mindset when it comes to opportunities.
I hear that.
There's plenty of humans on this planet and plenty of business opportunities. And I'm not particularly worried about it. And the more people that get interested in fitness and that take it up as a lifestyle, at a certain point, like people will get frustrated because it's like they stop making progress with whatever it is that they got into.
For sure.
And some of them give up, but others of them are like, oh, I'm looking for something more. Can I get the answer to why I'm not going anywhere? And then like there's always going to be science-based practitioners and more advanced people that are like, well, yeah, actually there are some answers. Some of them are pretty simple and I can help guide you through the process that'll take you further than where you currently are.
Oh, wow. Well, I like it. It's almost like people seek out the right answers, you know, when they hit that wall, and they're like, they sort of realize looking back at what they did, they're like, well, I did this trendy thing. It didn't seem to work. Now I have to approach my fitness with a dose of reality, like realness when it comes to working out. So yeah. And it, for sure, I'm sure the smart people find you, you know, people who think logically about it, they're not going to be dumb. They're going to go, they're going to realize that it takes work, it takes effort, but then it takes a grain of salt with that, trying to understand the simplicity behind certain things as opposed to making it too complicated.
Yeah. You know, I really feel like, yeah, at a certain point, it's like, figure out what you're good at, do it really well. And there's always going to be a market for it.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, the other thing, I know that I'm the wrong person for beginners. Like I'm terrible for beginners. Like I don't have the right message for them. I don't want to work with them.
Yeah.
I'm not going to make any sense to them. And for the most part, like not all of them, like that's really unfair of me to say it in that way.
Mm-hmm.
Because I certainly, there's enough people out there with different mindsets, and like, I work well with like very logical framework oriented people.
Yeah.
And also people that like don't really mind consistency. Like there are some people that legitimately don't like consistency and sort of repeating the same thing. But it's like, well, if you work with me, that's what we're going to do. Like we're going to figure out what you need to do, and we're going to do that thing, and we're going to do it over and over again, and we're going to move it in a direction.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's a lot of people that like that, and there's certainly a lot of people that don't like that, but you know, I just sort of stick to what I do, and eventually it fits with the right populations. And some of those people are beginners, actually. They sure. just like come in with the mindset, like, I usually work well with pretty like, I don't know, they come from all different walks of life, quite honestly. It's just some people sort of get that. It's like, hey, well, what I want to do with you is move you from where you are towards mastery.
Mm-hmm.
And mastery is going to require that you do the same thing over and over. If you want to learn how to speak French, you can't just like,
consistency.
Put in, we can't do a half hour of French today and then a half hour of German tomorrow. we're going to have to practice French day after day after day after day and like build up some repetitions, particularly early on. And then after that, like you might have some command of the language and now we can play around a little bit. But until then, you really need to focus on the basics, and we need to repeat those basics over and over again. And it's going to really, like, even if you think you know it, trust me, you don't know it. Like it takes a little while to learn a new language. And that's I do think that the learning a foreign language and learning how to train for beginners is a very strong corollary people can usually understand.
Yeah, it makes sense. And I know with coaches, you know, new coaches coming into the field and trying to establish what makes them different as like a personal trainer. And I know that was my pitfall personally, is putting too much variety into people's fitness and being too trendy with everything. And, you know, it's going into it, you know, for starting new people and beginners, I guess they want to do different things. They want to learn different things. And then you get caught up just changing it up every single time they walk into a gym. So there's never any consistency and you never get them toward that goal. So, yeah.
It's funny. Like I've been involved with exercise and fitness since the 90s, you know, which is, it ends up being a long time at this point.
For sure.
And, you know, even as a kid, like I grew up playing sports and watching SportsCenter every morning. And back in the early and mid 90s, after SportsCenter in the mornings,
mm-hmm.
they would have the workout shows on. And, you know, there was like bodybuilding shows and aerobic shows and blah, blah, blah.
Sure.
And, but I would like legit watch those because there's not that many channels back then.
Sure.
And it's kind of funny to think about how long I've been watching this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But even back then, like if you were doing, you know, step aerobics class, like I would say 90s was this era of like bodybuilding and step aerobics. Like those were the two things that really dominated.
Hot buns, like the, all that stuff for sure. That's awesome.
But you know, it's like actually pretty good stuff for the general population when Definitely. You get down to it. Like I keep telling personal trainers that I work with or that I try to educate, like your job, I would say if you're a good personal trainer, Prainer, you generally turn your clients into bad bodybuilders. They're never going to be good at bodybuilding, but like generally speaking, for the goals that that personal training clients have, they sort of fit into the domain of what a bodybuilder would be ultimately doing, but your clients will be bad at it. Like they need to lift, they need to lift moderate weights for moderate numbers of reps. Learning how to get a little closer to failure with good technique.
Wow.
And then they need to do like aerobics, like cyclical or calisthenic type aerobics.
Sure.
And then you're going to consistently be working on them with their diet over time. It's literally the that's basically it. Like, you know, yeah. I make all these analogies. I'm like, you know, like your personal training clients are kind of like driving Toyota Camrys.
Yeah.
Like you know, it's sort of silly if you try to jump a Toyota Camry or like race it or do a quarter mile with it or, you know, rally car race it or something like that. Like,
yeah.
It just doesn't look right. Like everyone's going to look at you like it's ridiculous, but like drive it normal, like kind of keep it around the speed limit, use the blinkers to change lanes. And don't expect it to be much more than that. Like every now and then you might get like a little bit more of a souped up one that comes in and you're like, okay, well this one I might be able to play around with a little bit more, but you know, 9 times out of 10, your clients are going to be Camrys and you try to, you know, and then the modalities that you use with them, when you try to get too fancy with them, it's like just a mess most of the time.
Yeah.
You know, and like when you think about their goals, it's usually health and aesthetics, and aesthetics is going to be more muscle, less fat. And health is going to be more muscle, more VO2. I mean, it's a pretty simple equation, really, when you get down to it.
Yeah.
And so it's like the more that you complicate it with trying to add in, like, you know, when I think about training athletes, like training athletes involves quite a bit more of running fast, changing directions, jumping, and like throwing things.
Agility. Yeah.
And it's kind of like, that makes a ton of sense because those are the things that you do in sports. You run, jump, cut, and throw. Mm-hmm. But personal training clients, like that's not what they do in life for the most part. And then, you know, you get people that are like, well, yeah, but I want them to be able to jump in on a pickup football game. And I'm like, okay, but that doesn't, they didn't tell me that.
Yeah.
I think that's what you want to do.
Yeah. How would you know? Yeah.
This person didn't mention anything about that. This person said that they're like looking to lose weight.
Yeah.
And I know what that means. They want to look better.
Yeah.
And then it's also my job to like promote cardiorespiratory fitness and to do everything that science would tell me would add to quality years of life and longevity. So I know what the recipe is for that. It's muscle mass, VO2,
yeah,
and attempting to lose body fat through diet. Like,
yeah, but I love the bad bodybuilder thing because it's any sit down you have with a potential client, it's, and you'd know more about it than I would, but it always like circles that. Like everything, yeah. Every general goal is always going to end up with long-term health, feeling better, wanting to, I don't know, wanting to play with their kids or grandkids or something. Yeah. So you're right. It fits. It always finds a way to fit inside that mode of being
really
a bodybuilder.
Does.
Yeah. It's damn, it's bizarre, but yeah, you're right. No,
regular lifts, basic resistance training stuff that's done with good technique through full range of motion.
Yeah.
Progressive overload over time. That's done in a way that like is not excessive. Like most bodybuilders, like, if you look at like power lifters and weightlifters, they're walking around all day, every day with like, oh, my shoulder, my back, my this, my that. You know, like most bodybuilders are kind of doing okay. There's a lot less joint pain and problems like that. And those dudes are psychopaths. You know what I mean? Like, so if I just take a regular person, they're going to be at like the 45th, maybe the 55th percentile of adhering to what a bodybuilder would ever do at best case scenario. So like, if I choose those kinds of just fundamental normal lifts with appropriate loads, like it's going to lead to healthier joints, a more robust body.
Yeah.
You know, they're going to be able to do all the things that like, I don't need to recreate these elaborate and bizarre setups with sure. like Bosu balls and ropes. And, you know, it starts to look like a Hellraiser movie or something like that.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I'm like, I don't even know what's happening or like, and I don't know, if you work in personal training long enough, you see like, no one can do anything right. Like none of these clients ever do anything.
True
right.
though.
Like why would I think that like creating the most elaborate setup with the most difficult to execute exercise would be ever be the right choice? Like,
yeah,
you know, they can't do a push up properly. So I need to like go even further back with something that's simpler than that for them to even have a remote shot of doing properly. I don't know. You realize that it kind of, I don't know, like I think of things again, like from an analogy perspective, like if I hire a good gardener, you know, they don't just come into my yard and like just plant like 80 bazillion weird trees.
Yeah.
Like usually they're going to get rid of a lot of stuff, you know, they're going to
definitely
create better lines and edges and like remove stuff and make it more simple. They yeah. tend to prune more than they put in new things.
Oh, that's cool. That's cool. And it's, you know, when you do the real complicated stuff too, I can't imagine the personal trainer is necessarily getting it right when they're showing the person, you know, it's not, so it's kind of a detriment to both sides. You know, you're not like, you got to do it this way, man. This is how you do it with the Bosu ball. I don't know. People would probably look at you and go, well, I don't, you know, that doesn't seem like would work. Would there ever be a point ever where you would put something like that just for the hell of it into a workout for the general population? Or is it pretty much like it would never be used just because of how pointless it is?
Sometimes. Yeah, I mean, not like specifically a Bosu ball I would never use. Like yeah. it you know, like I don't know, is a simple way to put it. If I'm thinking about someone with balance or stability problems,
yeah.
why would making the ground unstable help?
Yeah.
Like since when does unstable plus more unstable equal stable? Like it's not an equation that makes any sense. Like I would rather create a better base of support for that person where I anchor them to the ground more effectively and teach them how to use the ground and push against a solid ground. Like if literally nothing can really move effectively unless something stays still. And, you know, if I'm asking them to move their body more properly, I need the ground to at least stay still to accomplish that. Otherwise, everything's moving. So I don't really know what's happening.
It's the transferable part. Like they're going to be walking on steady ground for the most part. So you're teaching them how to deal with that the best way they can. Right.
The other thing is, it's like, you know, the research on these balance challenge situations is that there's no transfer of training between balance challenge tasks.
I did not know that. I had no idea. Yeah, that's crazy.
It's confusing because you'll get a guy like a Sean White that's a skateboarder and a snowboarder.
Yeah.
You know, so you're like, well, clearly he learned how to snowboard by skateboarding. And it's like, actually, no. What you're dealing with there is someone who has a perfect body for these particular tasks. So he's always probably going to be better than most people with taking up new balance challenge tasks. Like if he decides he wants to learn how to surf, he's probably going to learn how to surf pretty quickly because he's probably the right height and weight and the right torso length with arm length and leg length sort of ratios. And he's probably also someone that has really good joint alignment, and his joints probably bend and rotate to the proper degrees that they should based on norms for range of motion of joints. And all of those things combine really nicely for someone to be able to learn those kinds of tasks at a high rate or a high level. But just because you learned how to surf doesn't mean that you know how to snowboard. Like you actually have to learn how to snowboard kind of from scratch, regardless of how much surfing you've done. And so it's like, but some people are like, for, if you took me, for example, like I'm not particularly well suited to do any of those tasks at a high level. Like I'm 5'6". I weigh over 200 pounds. That's not a great setup in terms of like, you know, dealing with gravity for these sorts of things.
For sure.
And then like my, you know, I have very short wingspan and leg length relative to torso and pelvic size. So that's really great if you want to like bench press and squat. Like I'm well built for those kinds of tasks.
You're made for it for sure.
Not for some other things. Like, so it's going to take me a while to learn how to surf well. And then it's also going to take me a while to learn how to snowboard well. And, you know, just it, like if you, I'm not going to learn how to snowboard faster by learning how to balance on a physio ball. Like there's literally no carryover between those things.
Yeah.
So if I balance on a physio ball, and I'm sure if I did an experiment and I tried to do it every day for a month, I guarantee I would get much, much better at it from day one to day 30. You know, it would probably be remarkably different, but there would literally be no transfer of that experience towards me learning how to skateboard.
Yeah.
I would have to go through the exact same procedure with learning how to skateboard. So, and for whatever reason, like there's people that kind of pull up unstable surface research, and like what it does is it causes you to send more neural information back to your brain when you're on an unstable surface. But that's simply because you just have more muscles trying to fire to keep you from falling down. And whether or not that's good is a different question altogether. You're teaching someone how to be better at the specific task that you're putting them into. Like specificity is always going to be the first and most primary principle of training and exercise that there is.
Yeah.
You get better at exactly what you do, and you better make sure that exactly what you're doing is important for that person. Because if it's not, you're spending a lot of valuable resources and time in a direction that's not going to yield anything in the area that the person's actually asking for help in.
Yeah. No, and it's yeah, and I'm sure you know, I know that when I've talked to other trainers and everything, that same thing goes with any regular exercise, just basic exercise in the gym. Like if you want to be better with squats, you train squats, specifically squatting, and you scale it depending on where they're at. But, you know, like to your point, you train that movement to get better at that particular movement. So you're not doing other things that might add to it. But I mean, maybe you could. Would you be able to? There's other movements that have their place, right, to contribute to a squat or that particular movement, right?
Well, you know, I like in the systems that I've designed, like I've got the book that I've written that's called A Coach's Guide to Optimizing Movement, Rethinking the Big Patterns.
Sure.
And you know, I created what I refer to as the seven pillars of movement system.
Okay.
And you know, the first pillar is called movement quality. And in that pillar, it like the quality that I'm speaking of is not how well does someone move.
Yeah.
I'm just talking about quality from the perspective of using the words as like qualifying or describing something. So inside of that, I say that there are 13 different trainable motor patterns that exist that you can do from three different stances.
Yeah.
And you can move through three different cardinal planes. So the way that I create an exercise is I choose the motor pattern.
Okay.
And then I choose the stance that I put the person in. And from there, I determine what plane of motion are they going to move through to execute the movement. So, you know, knee dominant movements are one of the 13 motor patterns.
Sure.
And if I put the person into a bilateral symmetrical stance, and they move in the sagittal plane, we would call that a squat.
Yep.
Yeah. And wow, there's different ways that we can, like, from there, like, I move on to pillar two, which is movement quantification.
Yeah.
And that's loading, velocity, and duration. And, you know, each of those has three separate domains, like high load, low load, moderate load, high velocity, moderate velocity, slow velocity, and long duration, moderate duration, and short duration. There's number cutoffs for each of those things, like high loaded exercises or anything that's 80% one rep max or more. So if I took a, you know, a knee dominant bilateral stance, sagittal plane exercise, and I did it for high load, short duration, and low velocity, I basically have a really heavy squat that the person's doing. You know, and that's how I categorize these things. And ultimately, like, I get a slightly different adaptation when I slide these descriptors in a different direction a little bit. So I, if I go right back into the same motor pattern, knee dominant, but I do it from a front back stance and I do it in the sagittal plane. And now what I'm talking about is some kind of a split squat or a lunge, you know?
Okay.
And I mean, I've seen it enough where there are plenty of people that I've seen that are very, very strong. They can squat the whole gym, but you put them into a split squat and it's like, oh, it's a bit of a disaster, you know?
It changes. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's kind of like, well, you know, do, first of all, do they need to be able to split squat? Some people, not really. If they're a competitive power lifter, who really gives a crap? You know what I mean? It's like,
what they don't point compete. Does it serve?
Yeah. They don't compete in the split squat competition. They're only the squat. So as long as they're healthy and their squat's going in the right direction, keep doing whatever it is that you're doing.
Yeah.
But for other people, it's kind of like, well, you know, do they need to squat? Does everybody need to squat? No, there's no real reason why personal training clients need to squat. I've had some clients that, like, you know, I've got, you know, within this seven pillar system, you know, I've got pillar three, which is movement standardization, and pillar four, which is movement progression. And everything has, like, very specific rules to it, you know?
Wow.
And within the, within those things, it's kind of like, you know, I know I, my rules lead me to where I would start someone with a squat.
Sure.
And generally speaking, without listing all of these things, because it takes an entire book to be able to go through every one of these damn rules. But
It's humongous.
You know, if you cut through my rules, what you would see is that if we're talking about the squat, the first exercise that I would end up giving someone who's never squatted before would be a heels elevated goblet squat.
Okay.
You know?
Okay.
And if you've ever given someone a heel elevated goblet squat, it pretty much looks perfect every single time.
Yeah. It's,
you know,
it's
like,
sets them up.
Yeah, they just, their body stays in great alignment. They drop all the way down. They bring their butt right to their heels, and they usually come up pretty good. And you're like, well, that looks really good.
Wow.
And then there's like a systematic way to progress it to wherever it is you want to take it from a movement standpoint. But, you know, generally speaking, a heel elevated goblet squat is going to be low load, moderate velocity, moderate duration. And it's going to look right, and it's usually going to feel right for the person.
Well, it's,
but
yeah,
but I was going to say, but even with that, like, I've still had some people where they're like, actually, this bothers my fill in the blank. And I'm like, seriously, like, even,
I don't know how you do with
this bothers you. Like, God, like, wow. Okay.
What do you do? What do you do in that point? Do you, I guess you're forced, you have to find a way to, like, to back it off, but, like, yeah, I don't know what with the goblet squat.
Yeah, like, so at that point, I just simply take away the pattern. You know what I mean? I take away the I'm like, well, like, there's just something going on. Like, I could spend all my time trying to diagnose and break the person, but that's, like, not even in my sphere of practice.
Yeah.
You know? So I'm like, well, we still have hip dominant patterns. You know, we could try front back stance, knee dominant stuff. we have all these other possible realms that we can go down, and maybe these things don't lead to a problem.
Yeah.
You know, just simply by switching knee dominant stuff to a front back stance, it opens up this whole other world of split squats, other things like a single leg press. There's a million options that I have to be able to go down. And ultimately, they still kind of target and train a similar motion and similar muscles. And, you know, I'm really not married to exercises. Exercises are just simply tools. They're means to an end. Because knee dominant exercises, generally speaking, are going to be training quads and glutes in different environments. And they involve the knee flexing and extending and the hip flexing and extending simultaneously.
Yeah.
And hopefully we get to move through full range of motion. And if we're in an upright position against gravity, hopefully that person has a little bit of abs on and hamstrings on at the top of the movement. And if I've got that, I feel pretty confident that they're doing it right.
Yeah, it's you've managed to create a blueprint that allows for trainers to sort of choose workouts within, like give variability, but it makes sense. Like, it's cool because you can progress it. I'm amazed by that. So they can literally look at this and within those stances and those planes, they can choose a humongous, like so many different moves and workouts that still have a bare, like still make sense within the training program. So
yeah, I wanted everything to be logical. Like, there is a reason for every single thing.
Yeah.
And it's not just like, you know, I love Mike Boyle, but you know, his progression system isn't actually really based on principles necessarily. It's just kind of like, well, from my experience, I've seen that for knee dominant exercises, 80% of people that come in can do a rear foot elevated split squat with dumbbells and it doesn't cause any problems. And I'm like, okay, yeah, I mean, I guess that's true, but like, I don't know if that's like a logical enough way to arrive at that exercise as your first exercise for knee dominant exercises.
For sure.
You know, I created what I call the Big Ten principles of progression.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like, if I go through those things, it's kind of like you start static, you start bilateral stance, you start sagittal plane, you start with short levers. You start with, you know, minimizing the difficulty of managing gravity. You know, you start with maximizing reactive neuromuscular training. You start by maximizing constraints. You maximize references. You know, there's, I always forget, you know, a couple of them, but even within the ones that I just listed, it's kind of like, and some of these things, people are like, well, what's the definition of constraints? And I'm like, well, they're passive. They're physical objects that create a block and that prevent you from moving in directions that I don't want you to move in, you know?
Yeah.
For instance, like, if you're squatting and I don't want you to, I want you to move vertically rather than like horizontally, like a hinge. Like, I'm big on trying to get people to not hinge their squats.
Okay.
Like hinge your deadlift, but move your squat like an elevator, move your deadlift and your hinge like an elevator.
That. Yeah.
Sorry, like an escalator.
For sure.
Like hinging is the lawnmower forwards and backwards. Squatting is the elevator up and down. So a constraint that I use all the time, I just take a PVC pipe. I sit behind the person's butt and I say, hey, don't hit this stick while you squat. You know, it just is a barrier.
Yeah.
It says, don't move this way.
Oh, that's
references, references are things that I want you to feel the whole time that you're doing something.
Well,
and for your sagittal plane weight room moves, the biggest reference that I'm usually giving people is the heels. And so if I can provide somebody something where they can feel their heels more strongly, typically the exercise gets done properly to a higher degree. So I'm always putting objects directly on their heels or pushing on their heels or something, and I get a better response. So, you know, most of the other things people are like, you know, I'm like, let's just think about the goblet squat for a second, like the knee dominant movement that I described. Like, heel elevated goblet squat. Why does that one fit in with these principles of progression? Well, it's short levers in terms of the arms.
Yeah.
You know, the arms are not up and away from the body. They're in tight with the body. You know, what else is going on? Well, the constraint is the heel elevation.
Okay.
You know, I'm literally passively moving your heels into this position of more plantar flexion.
Yep.
And when you're in more plantar flexion as your start position, it's typically an easier place to be able to move vertically like an elevator in a squat rather than horizontally like a lawnmower going forward and backwards, which is more of a hinge.
Yeah.
You know, we're starting static in terms of what's happening with the upper body.
Yes.
You know, the upper body's not moving around. It's not like I'm having you do a snatch balance or something along those lines. Like something, a lot of things need to stay still. That's I'm certainly true. Not having you stand on an unstable surface or something like that.
Now hop on this Bosu ball. Yeah.
Yeah. In terms of managing gravity, it's much easier to manage gravity in a squat when I put the load in front of the person rather than behind the person. You know, when I front load a squat, is reflexively going to shift your center of mass backwards. And when your center of mass goes backwards, it's much, much easier to be able to squat up and down the way that I want it to be done. And so also true. That like the heel wedge fits into that managing gravity thing more effectively too. And like sometimes for people, like I'll just explain it, like it's easier to hinge on an uphill and it's easier to squat on a downhill. Okay. Like okay. If you watch people walk down a hill or you watch people walk up a hill, if you just watch people go walk up a steep hill, they're going to hinge.
They're going to sit
their ass back.
Yeah.
And that's how you deal with it, because hinging is primarily an acceleration dominant activity and squatting is primarily a deceleration based activity.
Wow.
And if I put you on a downhill, you have to decelerate.
Yeah.
If I put you on an uphill, you have to accelerate. You don't really have much of a choice. And your body will self-organize in a way to be able to deal with that environment. And it's all based on how I'm manipulating your relationship with gravity.
Yeah.
So,
wow. That's cool.
It's kind of like these are the sorts of principles that I build into the book to be able to guide people towards their exercise selections. And it's kind of like, it's sort of like, you know, I try to point out to people like, number one, like here's the principles in their raw form. Just like I'll explain every single one of these principles. But then when we get to the individual chapters on the different motor patterns, like the knee dominant chapter or the hip dominant chapter, I'll go into the weeds and kind of explain all of these sorts of things about hills and, you know, where to put loads for, you know, lever lengths and for center of mass perspective and, you know, this, that, and the other thing. But and then I'll also list out the exact exercises that I would choose from a progression standpoint for this particular area, 1 through 10 or whatever it is for this domain.
That's true.
So, you know, I really did try to create something that was like every selection was based on a very, very logical framework. It wasn't just like, oh, I like this exercise because I like this exercise. It's like, no, this exercise fits exactly here based on all of these other factors.
Yeah.
This is exactly why it exists in the place that it exists.
Yeah. The system is so perfectly I love the constraints thing. Like I do. It allows you to put them in a position and they orient themselves in the way that you want them to do the exercise. And it's if new personal trainers and new coaches took on that mode of training, I'm sure they get somewhere with their clients and they feel as though it's their clients are getting something out of it. You know,
I'll tell you, I just hate watching people do things that are just not right.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's sure. Like, if I can have a day where every single one of my clients does every single exercise and it looks right,
yeah,
I'm really happy.
Oh, I bet you are. Yeah.
And they are too. And it's like, you know, then we can actually kind of like make some progress and we can go places from a fitness perspective. But it's like, you know, half the battle is getting people to do things properly, it feels like.
Yeah.
And, you know, I screw up all like every day. Like every day I go in and I pick an exercise or something along these lines. And it's terrible, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, what did I do wrong? And I'm like, oh, I violated like 7 of my own 10 principles. let me go back and like create something that makes sense on these things. And it's like, oh, there we go. Now they're doing it right. And their knee doesn't bother them. And they're feeling all the right target muscles and it looks right. It feels right. And we've got something that we can build off of going forward.
Turn around behind them and just open your book real quickly and just be like, hold on, just stay there real quickly. I just got to check something. Hold on.
As crazy as it sounds, it literally is what I do. Like,
yeah,
you know, because personal training is a bit like playing pin the tail on the donkey every day.
Nice, for
where
sure.
The person, you know, they come in and they've got some different issue or something every day. And you're like, wait, what happened? You're like, well, yeah, I went out with my wife and we went paddle boarding for 12 hours. And now my shoulder. And I'm like, what? Fuck. Like, I didn't anticipate this.
Jesus
like,
Christ.
Okay. Like, Let's see what we can do. Like, so you're saying you can't move your shoulder more than 5 degrees. Like, oh God. Like, all right.
Oh,
like
God.
Now I gotta recreate the wheel here.
Yeah.
But every time I have to recreate the wheel for people, at least I have a rule book for like, okay, this is how a wheel actually gets put together.
Damn. Yeah. Cause that, so it's your contingency plan. It's you've created the fitness contingency plan for people.
That's 100% what it is.
Yeah. Jesus, that dude, that is brilliant, man.